Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us here on 89.3 KPECC. Always great to hear Bill Withers as we head into our second hour today. Later on, we're going to look at some of the different products that have gone away during this time of COVID-19. Some of it having to do with more complicated products to make, but we'll get into the specifics and we'll talk with you about maybe a favorite product that you simply can't find anymore. That's coming up later this hour on Air Talk. But we begin with the very latest on efforts to house Los Angeles County's homeless population as part of Project Room Key, the statewide effort that Governor Newsom updated us on yesterday. And we're going to talk about the ability of mental health professionals to be able to respond to 911 calls in lieu of law enforcement officers. But let's begin with what Governor Newsom said yesterday. His news conference was in front of a Motel 6 in the East Bay community of Pittsburgh. He talked about the gains made by Project Room Key and discussed how the program is bolstered in the newly signed state budget.
It provided an additional $1.3 billion to cities and to counties to support programs like this, meaning despite the deficit, despite the headwinds of stress that we had to address in balancing our budget, we still made a commitment to lean forward, lean into future, follow through on our commitment to do more and do better for homeless Californians. $900 million of that comes from the state itself. $550 million specifically for acquisition, not just leasing of units like this, but acquiring units like this.
This Project Room Key is the statewide endeavor being carried out by counties to house people who have been living on the streets and in far riskier circumstances for the spread of COVID-19. With us is the executive director of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, known as LASA, Heidi Marston. Heidi, thank you for being with us again, and congratulations on your being the permanent, not just the interim executive director. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you.
Let's start, first of all, with what's happening in Los Angeles County with Project Room Key. How many people have been housed?
Through Project Room Key in Los Angeles County, we have placed more than 3,600 people into motel rooms across the county. That's in addition to the thousands who have also come indoors through other efforts like trailers from the state of California or the city rec and park sites. Altogether, that total is about 6,000 people who have come indoors since the COVID-19 crisis.
And is this ranging very widely throughout the county, or are there certain places where most of the rooms have been obtained?
It certainly ranges throughout the county. We want to ensure we have coverage in all different areas because we do have such a large county. So it is very wide ranging. We have 8 service planning areas in the county, and we have multiple hotels in each service planning area.
Now, we still see, of course, many people who are living under overpasses, alongside freeways. We still see homeless encampments. So in cases like that, are these typically individuals who have refused the offer of a room, or is it simply there just aren't enough rooms to accommodate everybody who would like one?
That's right. It's a supply and demand at this point. So all of the rooms we currently have open are filled, and they're staying filled. So there are certainly people who are still wanting to come indoors. And so we are continuing to work with the city and the county to figure out ways to make that feasible, because at this point, the hotels we have open are all completely filled.
Do you have any sense of how many more rooms it would take to be able to provide shelter for all those who would be likely to accept it?
Initially, our goal was 15,000 rooms across the county. That's based on what we know the need to be and the number of people who are highly vulnerable to COVID-19. So I would say at least that many, if not right now we have about 3,600. So probably 5,000 to 7,000 would get us much closer to our goal of getting those folks inside.
And realistically, is there any way to get there funding wise and hotels or motels who'd be willing to offer their facilities for this?
It really depends on our ability to partner with hotels and motels across the county as things continue to open up and we see things reopening, hotels go back to business as usual, and so there's competition that comes into play. So the funding is a critical piece. As you know, FEMA is reimbursing 75% of these costs, so that's a critical component to sustaining this program longer term, as well as our ability to partner with these hotels as they're the reopening is happening simultaneously.
So without the federal funding continuing through FEMA, would the county in any way be able to pick up the full cost of doing this?
It would be challenging, certainly. I can't speak for the county and their budgeting process, but it's not a cheap intervention, but it's the right thing to do to save lives. And so we rely heavily on FEMA picking up 75% of those costs.
If you have questions about Los Angeles County Homeless Services and providing of shelter, we're with Heidi Marston, Executive Director of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, known as LASA. It's the lead agency in the county coordinating housing and services for families and individuals experiencing homelessness. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Heidi, I also wonder about the demographics of those that are homeless, because we understand that the majority of people at any given time who are unhoused are people for whom it's not chronic, but a circumstance that, you know, a few months down the road is likely going to change. Has that ratio of chronic to short-term homeless, has that shifted as a result of the moratorium on evictions and rent and things like that?
Mm-hmm. So what we know about our population, and this was as of January, our point in time count, is that about 2/3 of people who are experiencing homelessness are on their first episode of homelessness. And the vast majority of them cite economic hardship as the reason for them falling into homelessness. So to your point, it becomes more and more critical that we are putting policies and measures in place to keep people housed. While it's an investment up front, it is a cost savings longer term, and it also has a significant impact in the health and the well-being of those individuals who are on the verge of homelessness.
We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. You can ask your questions. You can also tweet a question at Air Talk or post your question on Air Talk's Facebook page. Also joining us is Director of Los Angeles County's Department of Mental Health, Dr. Jonathan Sharon. Sir, thank you for being with us again. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Let's talk about mental health services for homeless Los Angeles County residents. Are there additional forms of mental health outreach given COVID-19 that the county's offering?
Well, you know, we're in the process and have been for the past 3 months of figuring out how to deploy as many of our staff and also contract agencies to pitch in. And we're doing that for those who are suffering from serious mental illness, and also more broadly, those who are at our congregate settings, as well as the Project Room Key sites that Heidi has mentioned. And, you know, what we're trying to do is to make sure that that mental health supports are in place. We can do that both by having folks on site, depending on the demand, and also in a consultative manner. So we're doing both to try to help people who are suffering, many of whom, as you know, are traumatized by a number of things, including their experience on the street.
Also, I was just wondering, and Heidi Marston, I'm interested in your thoughts on this too, because people are distancing themselves, I'm just wondering for, you know, homeless individuals, some of whom, of course, are, you know, out looking for people to give them money or food or things like that. But with people, you know, distancing, I just wonder if the experience of living on the streets now is very, very different for that percentage of people who rely on contact with the public. Jonathan, Sharon, any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think regardless of you know, who in our population, we're all being impacted by, you know, the recommendations and the mandates to be physically distant. And I would suggest that that's the same for folks who are homeless. And, you know, at the end of the day, we all need connection. We all need community. And I'd like to think over time that that in spite of the public health orders, that we're going to be able to figure out with this new agreement how to get folks who are homeless not just shelter, but community. The community that they have on the sidewalks needs to be turned into community that they have in appropriate habitable spaces.
Yeah, it's such a good point. Heidi Marston, your thoughts on that and how COVID-19 and distancing is factoring into this?
Absolutely. We do have a number of folks who rely on those community connections, as John said, not only for company and for well-being, but also for resources like food. So our outreach teams have partnered with a number of agencies that provide meals. And so we pass out over 5,000 meals a week through our outreach efforts right now to ensure that folks who have lost some of those connections, whether it's through a food bank or through some sort of a food kitchen that's no longer serving or has minimal hours, that they still have availability and available food and meals to stay nourished. So the gaps that have been created, we're doing the best we can to try to fill that through our outreach efforts.
Heidi, we have a question from Ronnie in Hollywood wondering, how does someone access Project Room Key immediately? Ronnie knows someone with critical medical needs and could really use a room under Project Room Key. So how do they go about it?
Mm-hmm. So there are a few ways folks can access the rooms. The best way is to work with your service provider in the area and ensure that that individual is connected. So if you go to the LASA website, lasa.org, we have a map that shows you the service providers, like the People Concern or PATH, getting them connected through a case manager so we can get them referred in. Even if it's not Room Key, getting them something indoors to make sure that we have something. But if in this case, if you want to send me the information that you have, we can also get an outreach team out there to connect with that individual and
okay.
Make sure we have them in our system.
So, Ronnie, hold on. We'll get your contact information and try and connect the individual that is in need. Ava in Venice, or Eva, I'm sorry. Your question, please.
Two things. I just wanted Heidi to clarify how many people are actually in Project Room Key, because my understanding was that there were 15,000 rooms, which you ended up, mentioning, but then you said there were 3,000 people that were actually in Project Room Key, or six, and I just wanted clarification. That was the first thing. And second thing, I know that from LA Times articles and from some research, Prop 63, which was in 2004, the millionaire's tax, was supposed to be funds for the mentally ill and homeless people, and from the LA Times reports, they have been hoarding that money. And in 2018, that's almost 15 years later, they already had almost $1 billion that was unused. And LA Times and other people were asking, why was that money hoarded? Is that money now being used, and can it be used for the mentally ill that are on the street?
Well, in fact, I think there was an announcement that that money was going to, in part, be redirected for homeless services for those dealing with mental illness. Can you fill us in, Heidi Marston, on how those Prop 63 funds are being spent?
I'll actually defer that to John. I can respond to the Project Room Key.
Okay, great.
So if that, okay.
Yeah,
so
please.
On the Project Room Key numbers, you're right. Our goal across the county was 15,000 because that's the need. Currently, we have about 3,500 rooms that are operational. And in those rooms, there are 3,600 people. So some rooms have double because of couples or families. But I think the other 15,000 number that you heard was statewide. There are 15,000 rooms. But here in LA County, every room that we have open and available is filled.
All right. John, you want to respond on the other thing, Prop 63 funds?
Yeah, you bet. You know, I've been in this job for about 3.5 years. And when I when I showed up, I would say that there were funds that had not been spent that could have been spent. And since I got here, we had not ever spent more than $400 million. Actually, sorry, $400 million of MHSA. Last year, we were up to $800. A significant portion of the MHSA funds do go to housing. They go to services for the serious mentally ill, and they actually go for infrastructure as well. This last year, of our entire budget was almost 50% of the services that we delivered were directly deployed for those who were suffering from homelessness or unstably housed, and in addition to having a diagnosis of a serious mental illness. The last thing I'll say about Prop 63 is that a significant portion of that money was kind of put into what we call the No Place Like Home Fund, and that was a state effort. And the No Place Like Home Funds are in the process right now of supporting permanent supportive housing. In addition, our county is pressing the state to allow us to be more flexible with that funding so that it's not only being dedicated to permanent supportive housing, but also vouchers and less expensive support for housing that also doesn't take so long to stand up.
We'll continue our conversation with the director of Los Angeles County's Department of Mental Health, Dr. Jonathan Sharon, and also with Heidi Marston, who's executive director of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. Orange County has just ordered bars, pubs, and breweries without dine-in food service to be closed at midnight tonight. Health officials in Orange County just issuing that order. Orange County bars, pubs, and breweries that do not also have dine-in food service have been ordered to close. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Back in 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on your smart speaker if you tell it to play KPCC, or listening to our stream at kpecc.org. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. We're talking about a couple of very important topics during this portion of the program. One of them is about homeless housing and services and what's going on with that relative to COVID-19. The other issue is, what is the capacity now or in the future for social services teams to go out and respond to 911 calls that are for homeless intervention, for mental health intervention? What are the potential risks in employees doing that? What sorts of training needs to be involved with that? Is that something that realistically could be done in Los Angeles County communities instead of law enforcement responding to those types of calls? If you have questions for our guests, Heidi Marston of LASA and Jonathan Sharon of LA County Department of Mental Health, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Dr. Sharon, what sorts of opportunities are there or challenges in having non-law enforcement respond to the kinds of calls I was mentioning?
Well, Larry, I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity and alignment right now, and you know, just frank momentum. This department, going back to the late 90s, started doing co-response with the sheriff, and that has expanded significantly with LAPD as well as with 34 police departments around Los Angeles County. And the goal there was to begin meeting real-time health and human service demand with health and human service supply. And, you know, since I've been here, we have significantly increased our capacity to do that, not just with co-response teams, but also with an expansion of our START or school threat assessment and response teams to deal with issues that arise in schools, but also with an innovation project for which we received funding from the state to develop therapeutic transport, what I had formerly called the Mental Health Ambulance Service. And what that program does is it actually allows for mental health clinicians with peers, individuals that have lived experience, and telehealth for psychiatry to go out into the street to engage people who are having mental health or behavioral health challenges, and then when necessary to provide transportation, rather than what's been happening for years and years, where our teams will go into the street, assess somebody, and then have to call law enforcement or an ambulance to move someone into a setting that is appropriate. So we see this also as a significant way to divert people from going to the jail, which happens, unfortunately, I think, when law enforcement is burdened with something that really belongs in the health and human service arena.
So it's not a typical protocol when law enforcement comes out and there's no criminal issue involved to call your department or to call Heidi's department. That's not a typical thing that happens?
Well, you know, it can happen. The problem is the resource. You know, if we have more resources in, you know, what I'm calling the health and human service crisis response, we'll be able to respond more quickly. You know, the question would be, if we can't get there for an hour or for a couple of hours and police can get there more quickly, then law enforcement will respond. And one of the things that's happening, and I salute one of my bosses, Janice Hahn, is that that we're being compelled and I'm being asked to lead a steering committee that will bring together law enforcement and fire from the city, from the county, along with my counterpart health departments. And I would also add DCFS and the Department of Public and Social Services and community members to design a central receiving and triage station. So you can imagine that when calls come in, they're not simple, and they come from many, many different areas. But when they come in, we need to have a consolidated and integrated assessment and triage unit that then deploys staff depending on or resources depending on what we estimate to be the demand. If it's a mental health crisis, and that seems pretty clear, we're going after it with mental health. If it's a behavioral disruption with violence and possibly firearms, we would want to be sending law enforcement. And whenever possible, we want to make sure that clinicians are in the field assisting with the real-time responses.
It would sound like dispatchers are going to have to be retrained, because if they're going to have to make an instantaneous decision as to whether any threat is posed, and maybe the person who's calling it in isn't particularly precise in what that person is saying about the particular incident they're reporting or the individual. I mean, it seemed this is yet another potential training challenge, John.
It's a massive training challenge, Larry, but what I'm suggesting, and again, I'm literally just now setting up the meetings in the aftermath of Janice Hahn's motion, is that we need teams. As I had said, these are not simple scenarios where it's like obvious what you would want to deploy, but we're going to have teams co-located that are, you know, taking calls and making decisions based on their shared expertise, which is the best way for us to most effectively and specifically deploy the appropriate resource to address a community demand.
Is there a model you look to that you think is closest to what you're looking at implementing here?
Well, yeah, there are models in Oregon.
Cahoots, yeah, we talked about that.
Right, in Arizona, as well as in New Mexico, where there are, active collaborative efforts between health and, you know, public health and public safety. And we're going to be leveraging, to the best of our ability, the experience and models of others. But we have to bring that home to a jurisdiction which, as we all know, is beyond massive. And the challenge for me, and I think for all of us, will be how do we bring these different, jurisdictions and departments together so both in terms of our technology and our staffing, to make sure that we're able to collect the proper data, to deliberate the data, and then to provide a agreed upon deployment of resource
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for Eugene, Oregon, or even Albuquerque to do this. We had the mayor of Albuquerque on last week, talking about this. But for a county the size of L.A., which is, essentially a country you're talking about, I mean, it's just a massive undertaking. So what kind of funding would be necessary to do this countywide?
Well, I mean, look, we in the Department of Mental Health are in the process of dealing with massive decreases in our funding because we rely upon tax revenue. But that said, we are always trying to pivot, based on the demands of the community and based on the priorities of the board. The board, like us, is in addition contemplating how it, how it's going to prioritize the funds that we have, which again are also limited. And as you know, and I think it was covered in the LA Times. The mayor and the city is basically saying that they want to commit resources toward that health and human service response, which really is a different form of public safety. I mean, I would argue that public health and equitable public health is a form of public safety. So we're in the process right now of reimagining how to support public safety in the most humane and care-oriented fashion. And all of our resources across jurisdictions, across departments, need to back up the plans that we develop to be successful.
We're talking with the director of Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health, Dr. Jonathan Sharon. Also with us, the executive director of LASA, the LA Homeless Services Authority, Heidi Marston. We have a listener call I just wanted to share with you, Heidi. Louise at Vermont and Pico says, I'd like to thank LASA for finding me an apartment. I lived in a homeless shelter for a year. I'm 72 and a half years old, and I'm so grateful. Louise, thank you for sharing that. Heidi, I'm sure you hear this frequently, but still got to feel good.
Oh, it always makes a difference and matters. That puts a smile on my face. It's why we do what we do.
And what role do you see for LASA in being able to respond when it's an individual who's homeless, the call comes in about?
We feel very similar to what John has been describing. Leading with services when it comes to response for unsheltered homelessness is critical. The police have a role to play in law enforcement. That said, the majority of what we see are people who need services, people who need connections to resources, people who need mental health treatment or behavioral health access. So we want to see a system like Supervisor Hahn has put forward. We've seen similar motions through the city with Councilman Wesson's motion to reevaluate the role of LAPD and law enforcement in homeless services. And we always have and will continue to advocate for not only the decriminalization of homelessness, but starting with a services first approach as a way to address this crisis.
We have Amina who writes on the Air Talk page, we're seeing lots of homeless people with mental illness, with knives, machetes, nunchucks, other weapons menacing people in my neighborhood. Does that call for police response? She says, I'm not being unsympathetic, but I am often scared. Heidi, you want to respond to Amina?
I think this goes back to what Dr. Sharon is saying is while a police response might be the fastest in terms of deployment, when we think about what's going to be the best long-term outcome, is it arresting individuals or is it getting them the treatment they need to get them on the path to healing? And so while some of those instances might require police intervention, having that mental health capacity built out and real teams with real access to services that can really help people is critical at a scaled level because, as you mentioned, Larry, we would be the ninth largest state as LA County if we were a state. So it's not a small effort, but thinking differently about how we invest our resources is critical if we want to shift what we're seeing on our streets.
Sean in Manhattan Beach says, how does LA County Mental Health manage patient medication compliance? So many people stop taking their meds once they're not being watched. It's a big issue. Dr. Sharon?
This is a big issue. It's a major challenge for our field. There's a term, anosognosia, which really, as defined, means that people don't have insight into their illness. So you can imagine that someone who really, really benefits from their medication but doesn't recognize that they have an illness and may not like some of the side effects of the medication will stop taking that medication. We make every effort possible through the Therapeutic Alliance that our clinicians establish, and particularly our psychiatrists and nurse practitioners establish with our patients around medications. But it's a challenge in our field. It's different from other medical fields where individuals will say, hey, I'm sick, I've got this condition, I know I need medication, I'll take the medication and I'll make sure that I always have it. Not the case when it comes to mental illness, and particularly severe mental illness.
Crystal writes on the page, for those who are first-time homeless and categorized as being due to economic hardship, do we know how many have concomitant addiction and mental health issues? Heidi Marston, do we track that?
You know, I can't speak well to folks who are experiencing economic hardship who aren't literally homeless. That's not information that is held within LASA. But when we do look at our population who's experiencing homelessness, we do see a relatively large percentage, close to 40% of people who self-report either suffering from some sort of serious mental illness or even from a long-term substance abuse addiction. So there's certainly a need for the infusion of these services.
All right. I want to thank you both so much for being with us, answering all our listener questions. As we've talked both about the challenges of providing housing for those in need. We're taking care of dogs. That are. I was in the middle of an interview. My dog started barking as I was hosting from home with Karen Bass, the head of the Congressional Black Caucus. So it's part of working from home, dogs chiming in during the middle. Our thanks to Dr. Jonathan Sharon talking about those mental health needs in Los Angeles County. He heads the L.A. County Department of Mental Health. And Heidi Marston, Executive Director, L.A. Homeless Services Authority, to talk about efforts to house, particularly during this COVID-19 pandemic, those who are living on the streets. Coming up, a much lighter topic, but still one that might be near and dear your heart. What products have disappeared over the past 5 months as a result of COVID-19? And which of them might never be returning? We'll get into that and why that might be. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. We'll be back in 90 seconds.